Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the SFLC podcast. I want to thank our sponsors, Dependable Solutions, innovating the future of your small to medium-sized business since 2012. It's 2018. If you're not accepting credit cards, you're losing money. Plain and simple. Learn how you can save 40 to 60% on your overall credit card processing bill by going to dependable-solutions.net. Again, that is dependable/solutions.net. Also, teststrips.com, that is teststrips with a Z.com. Managing diabetes is your business, making it affordable is ours. Sell your extra unused diabetes supplies for up to $50 per box and support a worthy cause. Rated a Better Business Bureau accredited A+ rating for over 5 years. Partnered with 98.5, the Sports Hub, and affiliated with the American Diabetes Association. Make sure to check them out again. That is teststrips with a Z.com.
SFLC Podcast.
Alright, everybody, welcome back to the SFLC Podcast. Here on a rare Monday appearance after all of the craziness that was UFC 229. And don't worry, we will get into all of that. But excited to kind of bring on a really good friend to the show, veteran boxing coach who's worked alongside Freddie Roach. He's an MMA striking specialist. He's been here several times, ladies and gentlemen. I want to bring her welcome back, Angelo Reyes, to the show. Angelo, thanks for taking the time so fast after everything that happened this weekend in Vegas.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Ryan. You know, I love going on the show. You guys are always great. And, you know, I love reading your stuff too, man. So hopefully, I know you're out there and I think in a new place now. So hopefully we'll be reading some more of your stuff soon. But the weekend was crazy. And in fact, like yesterday, I spent a majority of the day catching up with some of my good old buddies there. Got to see Derek Lewis's coach a little bit, and got to spend some time with Tony Ferguson's coach, his head coach, Billy Fonua. I know most people would know him as Billy Shibe, but his actual name is Fonua. And if you guys want to follow him on Instagram, he's at Billy Fonua. That Tony Ferguson fight, man, I was so excited. I think for me, I'm happy that the card was so great. I kept talking about how you guys need to buy this. This is a great card up and down. Even the prelims are really good. The UFC Fight Pass for it is really good. But that five main cards, man, that was definitely worth the money. To pay for it, right? From the Derek Lewis drama, comeback, knockout, Michelle Watterson and Felice Herrig getting at it, giving us a scrap. We saw, you know, maybe the emergence now of Dominic Reyes, right? Because that was a really good fight with OSP. What I was saying is Tony Ferguson Pettis, to me, if that would have been the main event, I think we would all be talking about that. We would all be talking about that war and the heart and determination both fighters showed. And then at the end, too, right? At the end, right? The respect these two men showed. That's kind of like how we, as martial artists, that's how we would want to end fights, right? We don't want to end it with, like, the craziness that we saw. We want to end it with what Tony Ferguson and what Chuck Pettis did. So don't you agree with that?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. I think that, look, we can sit here and get as mad as we want about this, but at the end of the day, for those of us who got the pay-per-view, we paid for five fights and we got six. There's no other way to put that, right? So, but again, I know that you did very well on your predictions. I, of course, also had Michelle Watterson defeating Felice Herrig. I think you're absolutely right. The Dominic Reyes fight, obviously, when you end up defeating Ovince St. Preux, who's a tough matchup for literally anyone in the light heavyweight division,
that does show Dominic Reyes. I'm very interested to see what happens after this fight, especially knowing that Anthony Smith will be fighting at UFC Fight Night 139 coming up, or 138, excuse me, coming up here, I believe, next weekend against Volkan Ozdemir. So it'll be very curious to see if the winner of that fight is going to end up taking on the likes of going up against, Dominic Reyes. I'm all over the place today. I'm still kind of trying to break everything down. So forgive me if I sound a little bit odd.
You had too much pop, right, Ryan? I saw you do some posts about it. Did you actually do that? Did you get a proper 12 whiskey and a bottle or much?
It was rough, man. Now, again, I have to say this. I'm sure drinking it on the rocks and sipping it was probably the preferred way to go, but it definitely has a bite on the back note, and I would still say that I prefer Jameson to Proper 12, and Proper 12 is going to have its place. We all know that, but for me, it's just not my particular forte. That's not poo-pooing on Conor McGregor or Conor's brand or anything like that. It's just not for me.
That's right. And you know what? I can only say that same exact thing with how many people think it's just a Conor McGregor. You know, you're not fooling on Conor McGregor. It's just not for you. That's what a lot of people feel. And we both know that one of those people is my good friend, Pauly Malignaggi.
Oh, man.
I was like, well, it's funny. It's just funny. I actually think that would be clear. I know we're right down and talk a little bit about the Conor. But if Conor can't, for whatever reason, suspension-wise and whatever happens, can't come back to the cage over to make... If he wants to make some money, man, people want to see Pauly Malignaggi versus Conor McGregor in a boxing match. I'm telling you, the drama, that whole thing, that was... you know, with the sparring, it's interesting. And Conor's about money. And recently, Pauly called him the pinata. He said, everybody wants to take a hit at him, and they all surprise when you do.
Exactly.
he was calling Conor the pinata. I thought that was pretty clever. But anyway, yeah, no. I want to talk about the Ferguson-Pettis fight more. Tell me what your thoughts on that one was, because I was really excited about that. If that was the main event, I was like, wow, this is so worth it.
I mean,
so you tell me, what were you thinking?
This was the fight of the night. I mean, obviously, everybody was paying attention to Conor Khabib, because you can't not pay attention to Conor Khabib. But Tony Ferguson is really the only one who kind of saw the worst possible outcome from an injury, stripped of his interim belt, robbed of his chance to fight Khabib, or Conor, or whomever it was going to be. You know, that was robbed from us. And now Tony Ferguson had to take, this was not a, you know, comeback, like, you know, let's get you back into the ring kind of fight. He took on a surging Anthony Pettis, and that fight delivered. And Tony Ferguson, his post-fight was outstanding. He was talking about how he likes pain, because pain is real. Because, you know, happiness can fade quick, but pain's like, oh shit, there it is. Like, I need to see that. He's riding high, and unfortunately, he's going to have to wait even longer after that monster battle, because you know medical suspensions are coming up. You know, you don't see Ferguson take that kind of brutality without, you know, coming out and saying, all right, you're 30 days no contact, right? So we're at least a month out from him training again. We have no idea what the Nevada State Athletic Commission is going to do with Khabib. You don't see it being Conor, because if you're Tony Ferguson, you have no reason to fight Conor right now. Your next fight is Khabib. So Tony is really, he got fight of the night, and what an amazing performance from both athletes. But he's really the only one that gets hurt again by all the stuff that was really out of his control.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with every single thing that you said, because you know, and again, the MMA structure is different than the boxing structure, but I feel like Tony is the type of fighter where if he was at Bellator, he would be a massive superstar, you know, because he would be like the key figure at 155, right? And in the UFC, it has been kind of weird that, so here's a guy who's on an 11-fight winning streak, tied with Khabib. He fought some of the very best Tony has, right? And here he is. He wins the title against a younger, stronger surgeon, Kevin Lee. And then he finally gets the match with Khabib. He trips on a wire or whatever, doing an interview to promote the UFC. And his reward was, we're going to strip you of the title. You know, which doesn't make sense to me, because to me, going into the Pettis fight, I still saw Tony Ferguson as a champion. I didn't look at it as, oh, okay, it's you know, Tony Ferguson coming back from an injury. I mean, that's one of the storylines, but the way I saw it is, yeah, this is the champ. Nobody still beat him, actually. So when it's all said and done, Tony Ferguson is still like that. You know, the champion that everybody should be recognizing. And now you're right. Now he has an opportunity to now go champion versus champion with Khabib Nurmagomedov. We just don't know what's going to happen with the suspensions. Now, the one thing I will say is I know that in California, or I mean in Nevada, or even in the United States, Khabib may be suspended, but I don't think that stops him from doing UFC Russia. And if next year, the next automatic fight is the opening of UFC Russia with Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Tony Ferguson, I don't know, man. What do you think? What do you think about UFC Russia, Khabib versus Tony Ferguson?
I think Tony wants a chance to fight regardless. And Tony doesn't strike me as the kind of guy who cares where this fight takes place. You know, and I think that we all kind of learned a lesson about what you should and should not say to somebody in regards to politics and family. And Tony will be a little bit more reserved than Connor was. But, you know, Angelo, you bring up a great point, because we're talking about the Nevada State Athletic Commission. You've been out in Nevada for years and years and years. You've seen some crazy antics go down in the boxing ring. You've seen them go down in MMA. What, in your opinion, kind of suspension or fines can Khabib legitimately be facing?
Well, first off, both fighters will be facing something, because that what we saw this past Saturday is very reminiscent to when Zab Judah and Floyd Mayweather fought in Vegas, and going into the final round, Zab Judah purposely hits Floyd in the groin. There had already been tensions brewing between both camps. So Roger Mayweather, who was the head coach, Uncle Roger, who was the head coach of Floyd at the time, jumps into the ring. Round 11, jumps into the ring, right? And then starts to have words with Judah. Judah then takes a swing at Roger. And then all hell breaks loose, and then police officers and everybody and other members of the team are jumping. So what we saw on Saturday night was very similar to exactly that. And if people want a precedent for, oh man, I wonder what suspensions they're going to get, look up the suspensions that Zab Judah got and some of his team members, because that's what that's essentially what happened. I mean, yes, there was a lot of brewing tensions in that. And yes, I think that not enough is being said maybe about the fact that Connor really overstepped a lot of boundaries. You know, it's one thing to promote, right? It's another, and if you want to promote like you're the bad guy, that's fine. But yeah, you know, when you know the character of the opponent that you're facing in Khabib, who from the beginning had stated, oh, I am going to punish you, and this isn't a joke, and this isn't about the sport. I am going to punish you, and I'm going to punish you hard. I mean, you saw at the end, I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that I understand the mentality that Khabib must have had, in where he has Connor in that neck crank. I mean, basically like torquing it, trying to break something. And Connor taps. And even still, you see Habib's not letting go. It's getting tighter. And the referee had to step in and and you could see the referee pulling his hands, pulling it like to release the pressure. And then you still see Khabib getting pushed by the referee while he's over Conor. And I think he said some words to him. And then that's when you see him directly turn around, start pointing at Conor's team. I think maybe it was directed at Dylan Danis. And then he did the eagle, man. He freaking leaped off of the octagon. And I think that's going to be an iconic picture now. Him literally soaring and crashing like an eagle over Dylan Danis.
Yeah.
So one of these days, if Khabib ever goes to Bellator, or if there's ever a super fight, I'm sure everybody's going to want to see Dylan Danis versus Khabib at some point, just because of that incident. And then, yeah, the melee broke loose, man. Then there was Connor and I think it was Khabib's brother or somebody from his camp. They're going at it. And then another member, and then somebody jumped into the cage and started punching Connor too. And it was just all melee. So again, as a president, if you want to research it, then think about the suspensions, the Zab Judah and some of the people between the Mayweather camp and the Judah camp during that time, and the suspensions they got from Nevada. I wouldn't be surprised if it's similar. You know, I really would. I wouldn't be surprised if it's all similar. But again, I don't know if that holds in where someone like Khabib, even if he's suspended here in the States, why couldn't he fight in Russia? You know what I mean? So I think this is more a question of how the UFC is going to handle it too. Because I know that Dana was saying, well, he has to worry about the commission. But in all reality, like, all right, so what are you going to do? The commission's going to go ahead and give you the suspension. But now what's the UFC going to do? I mean, you know, think about all the different type of moves. And I don't want to spend too much time talking about all the different scenarios you could see. But you could almost point to it, and there's going to be something wrong for them making that decision. So it's going to be really interesting to see exactly what the UFC decides as an organization. What do you think about that?
Well, first off, if we look at the aftermath of the Zab Judah fight, I believe he was fined $350,000 and they revoked his license for 1 year. So, and that's a magnitude of getting that Floyd money, right? So we're not going to see Khabib losing anything more than probably feasibly $100,000, which is still a lot of money to a lot of people. But it seems to me that that's what we'll end up seeing. And if he's going to get his license revoked for 1 year, like you said, it's really going to be about how the UFC wants to handle it. Because the UFC could have a fight down in Brazil, or like you said, in Russia, or they can go to any of the other places that are not in the United States and have that fight. But Dana's made it perfectly clear that he just wants to sit idly by, and that the athletic commissions and the local authorities take care of this. Which, again, if the UFC tries to throw any extra punishment on Khabib, now don't get me wrong, Khabib was wrong. Conor was wrong. In this situation, they were both wrong. We, as fans and as people who report on this, got a little extra, you know, stuff to talk about on Monday morning. But I think that at this point, you almost have to do what Stern did in the NBA and say, okay, fine. We did this with Connor, so we're going to do this with you. But from here on out, here are the new governing rules in the UFC as it pertains to how you go out and promote yourself or trash talk other player, other fighters, or what you do inside the ring if you do not conduct yourself as an athlete who upholds the UFC with some sense of moral integrity, you will be punished accordingly. I don't think the UFC's done that yet, have they?
No, and I agree with you 100%. And your David Stern analogy is perfect because it's true. You're in an organization now where it got bought by $5 billion. Look, man, across the board, there needs to be just rules about this. And again, I don't want to, like, people who are just now getting into this, they may be forgetting again that what started this whole thing is Connor being so crazy that he took a dolly and broke a bus window in a card he wasn't even involved in to attack Khabib Nurmagomedov. And then that springs from, again, the whole, well, this happened before that and that. So this was a real problem already. But Conor, being the key figure to the McGregor team, needed to maybe be more of a professional about everything, which, again, he did the whole Dolly thing. And then a lot of people feel that basically just got a slap on the wrist for that. Well, here we go, man. I mean, maybe if he didn't do any of that, and maybe if he didn't just get a slap on the wrist and he actually really got in massive trouble for it, maybe this doesn't happen. And in a way, I mean, maybe he kind of felt like, hey, man, you can't just get away with all these things all the time because you're Conor McGregor. I'm going to show you. And then now Khabib did it, right? So both of them are 100% wrong. Punishment, just like you said, has to be clear cut, you know, be brought down on both of them, both teams, both camps, both people. But also moving forward, I agree with you. There needs to just be a policy. I mean, why can't everybody be like Tony Ferguson and Pettis? They gave us a great fight. They blood everywhere. They were going after each other. And at the end, what did you see? You saw them both grab each other's hands. You saw them both raise each other's arms. You saw them both post about how much they respect each other. That's how the sport should be seen. Because at the end of the day, you're a martial artist. And if you're a martial artist, you're not supposed to be this negative figure, which Conor always kind of tends to gravitate towards. You know, and I don't know Conor personally. But I'm sure he does do positive things, you know, but overall his persona keeps seeming to be very negative. So, you know, here you are, you came into boxing, you're trashing boxing, you were talking about how you're going to be great and you're going to go after the greatest. So then you proceeded to get a beating from a 40-year-old, you know, in Floyd Mayweather. Granted, he's, you know, arguably the greatest or one of the greatest. Even still, though, it's like, okay, Conor, you're young, you're 29, and you're bigger than Floyd, and you're a striker, so that was the best that you could do? You know, the best you could do was that? You took a beating from a guy who was retired, pretty much? And then now he leaves MMA. When he comes back into it, and though I give him respect in the sense of going after the top dog, okay, that's fine. You want to go after the top dog? You want to show your heart. You want to show your passion. Great, Conor. Now, take your beating like a man. Take it like you talked all that smack. Well, you got beat down. You got dominated more than we've ever seen you ever dominated. You know, take it, man. Just take it and let the process play itself out. Maybe there'll be a rematch. Maybe there won't be. And again, I don't even know what suspensions will happen on his side of it all. So, but yeah, man, you know, that's why I keep gravitating more towards, let's talk about Tony Ferguson versus Showtime Pettis, because those guys aren't being talked enough about how amazing their martial arts display was. Am I right on this, Ryan?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, we'll get back into that in a second. One more quick note. Being down in Austin, obviously Austin City Limits just ended. There was actually a rather popular band that was here from Dublin, Ireland, and they were actually at the establishment I was at last night. And I picked up on the Irish accent because it's hard not to. And of course, I had to ask them, you know, what they thought about Conor McGregor. And you know, again, like you said, I'm sure Conor has done amazing things in his community. He was a great story coming up from nothing to become a champion and, you know, obtain all of the riches and the fames in the world. But the band that I was talking to, they're called the Coronas. They are not a fan of Conor McGregor. So this is not just limited to, you know, the American side across the pond. Some people like Conor. Some people don't. Oh, he's Irish. We've got Irish roots. There is a popular band from Ireland that was basically downplaying Conor McGregor, saying, look, he's kind of arrogant. We don't like him. That's not the way you conduct yourself. That's not the Ireland that we're associated with. So it was very interesting to hear that.
Okay. Yeah, no, Ryan, absolutely. And again, when we're talking about it, and I'm glad you even shared that, because During the Canelo Triple G fight, when I was there, and I was at the they do a Oscar De La Hoya takes everybody out to a private dinner like before the fights. On my table, when I was sitting on that table, I was with the BBC media group, and we were all just chatting up, talking about the UK. We talked about MMA in the UK versus boxing, and how boxing is still obviously the king. I mean, I always tell everybody that boxing is this global brand. You know, it's not going to go away. I mean, you can't even really have MMA in terms of global popularity compete with boxing, because I still have yet to see 90,000 people go to an MMA match. And I've already seen that twice happen with Joshua within the span of a year. You know what I mean? So it's not even the same. We're not in the same realm. But they were telling me that Katie Taylor is the more popular figure when it comes to the Irish people. And you look at someone like that, Katie Taylor, Olympic gold medalist, also came from the streets of Ireland, is a homer there, obviously. And, the massive love for her there is huge. And maybe, Conor could really learn from that now. Maybe humble himself a little bit and learn from someone like Katie Taylor on conducting yourself a little bit better to represent your people, you know?
Yeah, I agree. But you know what? You're absolutely right. And we'll kind of get off this, because we're all going to be talking about this for the next couple of weeks. But I think you're absolutely right that Tony Ferguson, I mean, he kind of came out the most victorious, really, of anyone here. Unless you look at, Derek Lewis's post-fight interview or Dominic Reyes, which, by the way, was brilliant. But, I know that you were in Vegas and you were kind of talking with one of Tony's coaches and brought in some really good insight that you and I were talking about off air.
Yeah, no. So a really good friend of mine is Billy Funwa, who is the most people would know him as Billy Scheibe again. And he's a very humble man. He doesn't like to be on camera or ever even brag about his accomplishments. And he's an amazing coach. And I speak to that from my own experience of actually working with him. We worked together for the Brandon Vera comeback in 2014. And as you know, Brandon Vera is the champion right now. He's the heavyweight champion in Asia, for one championship. So with Coach Billy, he's been the head figure and the head coach of Tony Ferguson from the beginning. And they're really close with each other. I know that you guys will hear more about, whether it's Eddie Bravo because it's 10th Planet, or you'll hear about this with Tony or that. But in truth, I can tell you that Billy is the very key figurehead as a coach in that whole unit. And to watch the game plan that played itself out and the type of things that Coach Billy has been working on with Tony, I don't think that people maybe give Tony enough credit for how hard it's been for him to go from the very bottom to get all the way to the very top. And this entire time, also, I don't think Coach Billy gets enough credit for how much he's really developed his fighter in Tony Ferguson. You know, because Coach Billy, one of the things I really respect about him is that he's the type of coach who is not, and again, I want to just mainly focus on Coach Billy here, but I found that in MMA at times, other coaches tend to maybe not want to give a call to other coaches who are an expert on certain fields and maybe ask them for their help, or maybe even hire them on to help them for a particular person's camp. You know, everybody tends to be a little bit more clicky, right? Where, we're going to ride or die with team blank. You know, team McGregor is only going to be team McGregor. And team whoever is only going to be team whoever. And with Coach Billy's philosophy, he's a little bit more like, hey, if this is something that I can't teach, but I could see a chemistry in where my fighter, Tony Ferguson, can work with this other person, then I'm going to bring that person in. And at the very least, I'm going to give it a chance. And again, I know this firsthand, because before, everybody was talking about Tony Ferguson. Now, I got to train Tony Ferguson because Coach Billy called me up and said, hey, can you take a look at this kid? who, and I, at the time, I didn't even really know that much about Tony Ferguson. So I had to actually, I did a breakdown on his talents. I did a scouting report for Coach Billy on some of the things that he was doing. And this is years ago. And then I got to work with Tony. I met his wife. This is before he even had the child. And Tony is such a nice man. I mean, he really is one of the nicest, humble martial arts people you will meet out there. His character is really all about just growing and becoming a martial artist. Like you watch that fight, and most people forget again that Tony really shouldn't favor it, or the major favorite. Again, you know, Trevor Pettis was a juggernaut leading up to this fight. But you saw, man, Tony's striking distance, using the elbow, which was what caused that, elbowing, the way he can check the kicks. I think actually there's a way that even really kind of teaches how to, you know, when somebody's throwing an offensive kick at you, how to move your body a certain way so that person gets to be able to throw the kick at you. And I felt like in the first round that Pettis might have thrown a kick with his right leg, and it might have hurt his right foot just because of the positioning that maybe Tony was in. And then it just ended up becoming this great back-and-forth type fight, right? Because then Pettis drops Tony with that right hand, and Pettis is going crazy. And you know, we already know how good Tony is off of his back. I mean, you know, 10-time-style jiu-jitsu, hey, bravo, right? He's going for those ankles. And you're seeing this. Like, when I was watching it, I was seeing myself, this is literally two of the highest-level mixed martial practitioners showing us a very tactical battle with the feeling and the war presence of our Arturo versus Mickey Ward. So everybody should just be enjoying this. You know, like, this is what a main event mixed martial fight should be. Two equally matched and drama, you know, that you see it. I can't speak enough about how a technical coach, and I'm so happy for Team Ferguson, man. I'm happy for my guys, which, by the way, that used to be my old love card boxing teammate right there. He's been going now, I think, the last year or two, helping out with boxing. And I'm just so happy for you. So happy for you.
So, Angelo, outside of all of this, you know, again, great win for Tony Ferguson. What should have been a great night for Khabib Nurmagomedov. We know that, I believe rumors are still saying that he hasn't actually been paid yet for his performance. And, you know, that's going to be standard operating procedure for the Nevada State Athletic Commission. But being out there in Vegas and seeing all of this and kind of as like a people watcher out in Vegas, what was the overall feeling that was going on after the fight and the post-fight brawl?
Yeah, no, Ryan, even prior to the fight, during the weigh-ins, you know, some of the Irish fans and the Russian fans and all fighting each other. And, and then after the fight, I think even on social media, you could see the showing how there were fights breaking out after the event also. And it's just silly, you know, it's just none of this. It was just the whole point of going to events like this. When you go to an event like Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather or Manny Pacquiao events, I was a part of a lot of them, Manny Pacquiao, Marquez, Manny Pacquiao, Ferreira. And then, you know, same thing here now, you know, looking at Khabib versus Conor, the fans shouldn't get unruly like this, but it's just all silly. The whole point is for us to get to have a good entertainment. If you're passionate about mixed martial arts, then you enjoy the event. And then let's all just go home, man. Let's all go home. Let's all go to our families. Let's all do positive things with our lives. Why are we wasting our time, you know, sitting there with stupid things? I mean, think about the fans themselves who were fighting once another, you know, one against the other, whether you're a Khabib fan or a Conor fan, what are you fighting for? All it is Conor and Khabib got in an octagon, and it's for the entertainment of the people, for them to show their style of martial arts and who would win against who. Okay, the fight is over. So why is anyone outside of that entertainment value event all of a sudden going to fight each other? You know what I'm saying? Like, Warrior fans aren't going to be fighting with Laker fans when the Warriors and the Lakers meet at some point. Let's say it's even for the Western Conference Finals this coming up season, Game 7. It's a close, controversial result. I'm pretty sure, Ryan, that, you know, a group of Warrior fans aren't going to go fight a group of Laker fans.
Well,
and those are two of the biggest organizations in NBA. So why is every, you know, like, I would just ask for everybody again to just, will you stay positive? There are more important things in life than this. It's not that big of a deal. Just let it go and let's move on.
I agree with you. And what happened, and Steve Dunn, who's with the show with us, wrote a really great article for my MMA News about how the MMA fan is supposed to explain the weekend's events to the casual MMA fan. And I can't use the word casual MMA fan enough. And he basically brought up some great points. Every sport has seen something similar to this. Baseball has your bench clearing brawls. My God, the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing in the division series right now. If you think fireworks aren't on the horizon, you're wrong. Also, that this does not represent the MMA community. You know, this has happened once that we can all think of. And, you know, honestly, we saw Conor McGregor go and storm the Bellator cage something like a year ago and jump in the ring when he was a fan, just kind of sitting there and watching a fight. So this doesn't happen often. Tensions do get high. We won't see this happen again for a long, long time. But it doesn't represent our community, and it was just a poor showing. And, you know, tune into the fights that are going on, I believe, next weekend. You won't see anything like that. But you brought up a great point, which is, you know, at the end of the day, there are such larger issues for us to be looking at. And I know that you're kind of living that life on a day-to-day basis, Angelo, with your son and with his congenital heart disease. And I know that things have just kept kind of going and, you know, you have to live that life. I mean, how is everything going with your son?
Yeah, no, thanks for asking, Ryan. And I really do appreciate that. Yeah, most of the people that, if they followed me or they follow my Instagram, Reyes Boxing, they know that I post a lot about him. He was born with congenital heart defect. The actual condition is called tricuspid atresia, hypoplastic right ventricle. And he also has sinus node dysfunction. He's had to have a total of 9 surgeries from the time he was born all the way until right before he was 5 years old. You know, when you're going through that with your child and having him, you know, be in the hospital with you, and again, I don't want to make viewers sad about it. You know, I mean, these are just factual things that us congenital heart defect parents deal with on a daily basis. But all of us that are within that community, you know, we share stories. Like my son, when he was an infant, he flatlined, which is what caused a lot of grief and panic. And my son had to be put on this machine called an ECMO machine, which is pretty much the life support machine for infant children and for infants, for babies. And a lot don't make it after that. And even if the ones that do, there's a lot of different issues that come with that. And my son, I believe, still holds the record for the fastest to ever get on an ECMO machine and off of the ECMO machine without any side effect damages, major ones like brain damage or other things, paralysis, different type of things happening to him. And that was even after that, Ryan, we still had to go through two more major surgeries and a heart catheterization, and now he's 14 years old. You know, he's a freshman in high school. He's doing really well. The last time he had his open heart surgery was 10 years ago. We just celebrated that 10th year anniversary in August. And actually, I made a post about that, Ryan. Freddie Roach was there. Because during that time, I was in the middle of the training camp with one of Freddie's fighters. I was helping him get Anna Houlton ready for her first crack at a WBC belt. And what's crazy is that's a training camp. That the whole thing was happening. I'm assisting. But at the same time, I also knew, okay, and by the way, the very next week after this fight, my son's going to go in for open heart surgery. And another one, you know, like another one, right? Called the Fontan procedure. And Freddie, during that time, during the camp, he'd spent some time with Joseph. And he came up to the Bay Area. And I remember we were at Walmart, and he's buying Joseph toys, right? And, you know, he did a lot of those different type of things. And he was there. He was there for when Joseph went in for surgery, and he was there for the recovery. And just recently, even, Ryan, when you bring me back to this, for the Canelo Triple G fight, I was back in Las Vegas, because as you know, I have to fly back and forth all the time between Vegas and going to the Bay Area to check on my son. But the first question, I see Freddie, he's there for fight week, his fighter just won on an ESPN fight card on Thursday night. First question he asks me, when I give him a big hug, he's like, "Hey, how is Joseph doing?" And then the second thing he says, Ryan, is he goes, "Will you please let the little guy know that I still have his picture up on my room?" And that's the picture that I posted. And we got to reminiscing and about old times, and showed Freddie a footage of Joseph just last summer hitting the bag and hitting it, working the bag and everything. And Freddie was like, "Oh, wow, that's awesome. Oh, he's a southpaw. That's so cool." And when you get these moments, and a lot of the friends that I have, like Coach Billy, who's, Tony Ferguson's head coach, first question he asks is, "How's your son doing?" And the people who know me, they know. It's like all of this grandeur that you guys are seeing with MMA or boxing, main event this, main event that, none of that really, I mean, it's great. It's entertainment. That's what it is. It's entertainment. We're in a craft. We're all very passionate about what we do. But that's not regular life. Regular life, I mean, like, you know, I was just at a main event, right? Fedor Mir. I was in main events before that. I've been in the main event coaching for UFC, ONE Championship, Bellator. I've been in boxing main events. I think Anna Houlton today, I saw it. She just posted a picture when we were in Argentina. And at that time in 2012, that was a main event that was being globally televised for the world unification of all the belts for the 122-pound division between her belts and this lady's belts named Jessica Marcos, who owned the other belts in boxing. And 40,000 people were there for that fight. You want to talk about a massive main event. And at the time, that broke the record for attendance in Argentina, right? Yeah. And all of that doesn't even make me nervous a little. You know what I mean? I mean, like, I get, some butterflies, but it's just, it's fun. But dealing with every day having your son have congenital heart defect, you have to have a positive attitude. You have to stay positive. You can't let negativity get involved, because any little minor negative things, it can really affect the entire aura of everything that you're trying to do. So I find it silly a lot of times. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I'm not a fan of McGregor's antics, in a sense. I understand where it's coming from, but he has a son now. So he's going to have to think about, how does his son want to see him as he's moving forward? The same type of thing will start to happen with Habib too. And I think what I liked about what Habib's post-fight conference was, is Habib talked about how he knows he's going to be in trouble from his father, because his father didn't raise him to be a hooligan like that. And I believe that. I think that really came from a pure sense. So yeah, man, all of these fans that are going nuts and crazy and fighting each other, come on, can we just all be positive? Because there are greater dangers in the world and greater issues that we all have to deal with, like congenital heart defect being one of them. As you know, Ryan, I've really spent a lot of my time just being engaged in the congenital heart defect community, especially within this last year, because I just feel like not enough people even know about it. You know, you hear about cancer all the time, and that's a horrible disease. But congenital heart defect kills more children every year than every single cancer combined. Now, that's a daunting figure that most people don't even really realize. So that's why, for me, I feel like, yeah, everybody should know this. Just so that you know, even with Coach Billy, he was telling me he's going to go have his kids who are healthy, but he's going to have his kids get a cardiology appointment so they can get an echocardiogram just to make sure that their hearts are okay. And just recently, as you know, Ryan, we just found out Shaquille O'Neal's son, who's this amazing high school basketball athlete, but now he has to stop because they're going to have to do heart procedures for him because they just found out about his congenital heart defect. I have friends like Ronnie Turioff, who went into the Lakers and at 22 years old, the doctors checked them and he had congenital heart defect and they have to climb back from that, from him to have to go from open heart surgery to becoming an NBA world champion and playing in the NBA for 10 years. There's so many greater issues, man, that why would you even start a fight at weigh-ins, during a weigh-ins, for something that's supposed to entertain you? It doesn't make sense to me, you know? So at least for me, Ryan, I hope that the more people follow me or the more people look at my posts, that they understand there are greater things to this. This is fun. This is entertainment. Don't take it too seriously, though, guys. Like, at the end of the day, if it helps you with your day, it helps inspire you in any way, that's great. What my inspiration is every day when I wake up in the morning is that my son wakes up in the morning and he's going about his day like everything is normal. And that's one of the most courageous people I've ever seen go through so many things in his life, which is why I post about him all the time. You know, it's inspiring to see someone put on a smile, fully knowing what they have to deal with on a daily basis. So, yeah, Ryan, and thank you again for asking. I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. And, you know, you and I were talking off air and you had mentioned how Shaquille O'Neal's son, who is this massive basketball star, is now going to have to rethink his plans moving forward. Conversely, your son is wanting to go out and try out for the basketball team. So, I mean, what a great comeback it sounds like is going on over there.
Yeah, no, you know, and it's complicated now, right? As he's getting older, you know, it's once we didn't have to do as many. I mean, we still have to do a lot of hospital visits, obviously. But when we haven't had to do as many and maybe give them a sense of normalcy, like a lot of other congenital heart defect parents deal with, as they start to go from like age 8 to age 9, they start to play sports. You know, here you are, now you're 10. You get to that middle school age, and these kids, like my son Joseph, they start to gravitate towards, let's say, a football or a baseball. In my son's case, it's basketball. He loves basketball. This kid loves LeBron James. And everywhere LeBron goes, doesn't matter, that's the team he's rooting for, right? Absolutely loves LeBron James and goes in there. And he's gotten his skills to be really good. You know, I mean, I'm not just saying this because I'm his father, but I'm telling you, like, he dribbles well, shoots well. You know, he's really worked on the craft of basketball. He's really passionate about it. But again, he has half a heart. The diagnoses are real. Every year when we go to school, we have to send this whole report to the teachers about the exact condition he's dealing with and all the different things they have to watch out for. So here he is, freshman year in high school. He wants to try out for the basketball team. Now, last year, he tried out for the eighth grade basketball team, and we had to go through this whole process where I had to go to the school, talk to the counselors, talk to the coach, talk to the PE teacher, make sure that they know that both myself and his mom is allowing it. And now here we are. We're doing the same process again. I mean, today I'm waiting for the call from the cardiologist and where I have to talk to them. I'm going to be leaving Vegas. I'm still here right now, but I'm going to be leaving either tomorrow or the next day because I have to be there to make sure I get all the right forms. And then I'm going to show up to this basketball practice so that what tends to happen with a lot of these congenital heart defect children is obviously no doctor wants to be liable for allowing a child with congenital heart defect to go out there and do something and then something terrible might happen to them, right? Collapse on the courts, you know, something like that. So it's really, it becomes very hard because you're now also playing with this child's psyche. You know, you don't want him to feel like he can't do something just because he has congenital heart defect. If anything, he's done more than what most people do in their lives just by having congenital heart defect. So you take a look at someone like Shaun White, who's a three-time Olympic medalist. Well, he was born with congenital heart defect. So if someone like that can go into the Olympics and compete, it doesn't mean children like mine can't compete. But again, we're in a society where there's obviously going to be a lot of different fears wrapped around this congenital heart defect disease. And that's why I want to bring more awareness to it, you know, where people understand, look, just because yes, I get that you're scared of what could maybe happen, but it does, they're not disabled that way. There are athletic things that they can't do. I know I myself, I've been working a lot on an initiative, which I hope to be talking to you about within the, you know, maybe going into next year, where I want to work more with teaching martial arts to these very children that are like my son, because I know that their parents are going through what I'm going through now, where, yes, your child is going to get to this age where they're going to want to play sports, but there's going to be a lot of, you know, rules against why they can't play the sport. And I'm just not a big believer in not letting people give things a try, you know. So yeah, no, that's what's going to happen this week, you know. And in so many ways, Ryan, just him just doing the tryouts, it's a win already. You know, just to watch my own son do tryouts, it's already a win, you know, because I was the same guy that was sitting there in a hospital for 2 years watching him fight for his life. You know what I'm saying? So to actually be outside seeing your son dribbling a basketball, shooting around with all the other kids who don't have congenital heart defect and he's playing at their level, you know, to a certain degree, that's already more to me than winning a championship, you know?
Yeah. And I know that the American Heart Association definitely dedicates some time, you know, an awareness to congenital heart disease. And, you know, I know that you're more than familiar with all the stuff that the American Heart Association does. So, you know, we do just want to give a shout out to them. You know, it's there are a lot of, you know, horrible things that happen in this world. Like you said, cancer, you know, all the diseases that we see here. And I think that cancer kind of takes the number one. Of course, it is National Breast Cancer Awareness Month here in October. But, you know, it's just kind of a look at all the different things that people have to battle every day.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I definitely want to shout out the Children's Heart Foundation. They do a lot of work. In fact, Ryan, here's a Vegas story for you. So just recently, the Children's Heart Foundation, Vegas chapter, they do a lot of great things for children with congenital heart defect. Well, they're one of the people that they gave an award to this year is Dina DeBuff. And if you're in the boxing world, you would know her because she's the daughter of Bob Arum, and she's a part of the whole DeBuff Arum family, you know, they're the heads of Top Rank Boxing, which is what we see on ESPN. This Saturday, I believe, is Top Rank Boxing, Terrence Crawford versus Jose Benavidez. By the way, tune in for that. That's going to be awesome. On ESPN, and if you're an MMA fan, then you know I'm going to say you have to tune in to Bellator both Friday and Saturday because it's the heavyweight Grand Prix. You get to see Fedor versus Chael Sonnen and Mitrione versus Ryan Bader, right?
Oh, yeah.
So that's the fun stuff. But what I wanted to talk about was with Dina. She just got an award for all of the things she'd been doing as a philanthropist, from donating her time to donating a lot of money to the Children's Heart Foundation in order to continue letting programs like their camp program and all these other things happen. Because these things cost a lot of money. And when you have someone like Adina DeBoeuf dedicated and passionate to wanting to help children like my own and other children like that, and families like my own, you know, it's heartwarming. I wish, like, for example, on Saturday night, if we would have at least seen Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov is also giving X amount of money or bringing awareness to this disease or this initiative that's hurting people's lives. That would have been nice, right? But we didn't see any of that, you know, but that would have been nice. And then for me, being in the industry, I just feel like, you know what? There's more with just being on main event or having your fighters win. You know, there's way more to life than that. So I'm at least, and I thank you, Ryan, for giving me a little bit of the stage. I know that every podcast I go to or every interview I do, I always talk about congenital heart defect. I think that people just should know, you know, so just be aware. All you have to do, guys, is Google search congenital heart defect, and I'll guarantee you, you're going to see a ton of stuff from Jimmy Kimmel's son to Sean White, Shaquille O'Neal, you know, Ronnie Chernoff. Last year for the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe it was Jeff Green. He talked about his process and coming back from heart disease. So yeah, man, a lot more important things than just MMA and boxing and professional sports out there.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course you mentioned Bellator and had to shout them out. You can also check out an upcoming interview that I did with Carrington Banks, who's going to be fighting at Bellator this weekend against Mendel Nallo. Carrington Banks, you know, had that loss. Oh, yeah. Had that loss against Adam Pickle. And, you know, he's coming back. And he was on that hype train, you know, that jet-setter style mentality. And I appreciate you bringing up Bellator. It kind of works out well. You know, we kind of feed into each other. It's almost like you and I talk to each other, Angelo.
We're connected. Kind of like Derek Lewis's coach and and Bob Perez and Derek Lewis. Man, that was crazy. And probably the best interview of the whole thing, too. The end, you know, he's putting on his shorts after taking it off. I thought it was just very comical.
My God.
That's great. I hope he gets a title shot, Derek Lewis. He certainly deserves one.
It'll be interesting to see where he goes from there. But he even said, no, man, I got to go work on my cardio. I can't be talking about that. So he was very candid in his post-fight. And that's the kind of candid you can get behind. You know what I mean? It's fun. It's entertaining. You know, it's lighthearted after a man just went to war, you know, with a very, very tough opponent. But no, man, I always, always enjoy having you on. And, you know, we always end up talking and breaking down the cards and cutting it up. And, you know, even if we're not recording, you and I are just sitting there shooting the shit. It's always a great time to have you on. But again, I do thank you for, you know, kind of talking with us and seeing how Joseph's doing and making sure that everything's going good on that end as well. Because like you said, at the end of the day, we have a fun sport that we get to cover and we get to follow, but it is just a sport. And there are way more important things that we should be looking at. So thank you for taking the time to talk to us about it.
Hey, thank you, Ryan. And keep doing your thing, man. Again, write. I want the writing too, because you're very good at that. So, hopefully you get to cover, you're probably going to cover something this weekend, knowing you, you know, you're covering something.
Well, actually, I know that, I will be working during Bellator, but it doesn't mean I won't be recording it and coming back and watching it, in the privacy of my own home when I get back. It is, definitely downpouring here in Austin, Texas right now. So if we had a little bit of trouble earlier on with, a little bit of the vocals, I can assure you that it has to do with the storms that are coming in. But Angelo, I had such a great time. Thank you for taking the time with us. You know, we'll of course have you back in the near future and keep us all up to date and keep doing what you're doing on social media, you know, with your son and with congenital heart defect. It's really inspirational to see all that stuff going on and staying positive in the midst of all that, man. Like, I tip my hat to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what. We're going to let you go. And then thank you, as always, for joining us. You and I will be talking about Bellator and upcoming UFC. But ladies and gentlemen, again, the one and only Angelo Reyes joining us, becoming a friend of the show. We want to thank him for coming on. And we will catch you all next week. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.